Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But first this morning, he's starring alongside Andrew Scott, Ethan Hawke and Margaret Qualley in Blue Moon. He's acted with Vince Vaughn, Sean Penn and Frances McDormand, and we still love him for Bachelor's Walk. He's played priests, senators and Gardaí, Simon Delaney, actor, Lyric FM presenter, cook, motoring guru, big golf fan.
Merciful.
Good morning to you and welcome to studio.
Fair play for being able to read my writing there. That's really impressive. How are you?
I'm great. And yourself?
Ah, sure. Look, I'm grand. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you, Simon. It's always lovely to see you. Now, listen, tell me about great film, your part in Blue Moon. I'm working alongside Ethan Hawke and Margaret Qualley.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, Miriam, that when it arrived on my doorstep, and it came through the normal channels, my agent sent me the script and asked me would I audition. And when you get sent an audition request like that, you normally get a breakdown of what the project is, a couple of paragraphs. And I read the couple of paragraphs and I thought, I got that feeling in my stomach, you know, that I thought, this is so far up my street, it's practically knocking at my hall door. Because it was about Oscar Hammerstein, Richard Rodgers, Lorenz Hart, and musical theatre is where I started. One of the first musicals I ever did was Oklahoma, written by Oscar Hammerstein. And I thought, oh God, I'd love to get this now. And then I read the script, gorgeous script, all takes place over one night in the very famous Broadway restaurant Sardi's in New York. And it's the middle of March 1943, it's the opening night of Oklahoma. And the film takes place at the after party. I mean, it sounds great, doesn't it? So I thought, yeah, no, I'd love to have a go at this. So I did, you know, I did my research the way I would approach any role. And I knew a lot about Hammerstein. I'd done a lot of his shows. I'd read a lot about him. But I realised that I'd never heard him speak. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of, because I liked when I'm doing, an audition, look for a physical kind of tell, how somebody walks, how they move and how they sound. So I went and did a bit of a deep dive into Mr. Hammerstein and I found an old interview. And I found this gorgeous, crackly interview and his voice was, he was a very soft-spoken, well-educated New York man. His father, Oscar Hammerstein the First, he was an original theatrical impresario, built some of the original theatres on Broadway. So he was educated, he was from money, and he spoke with a beautiful soft tone. And it wasn't that kind of hard New York thing. So I did a bit of homework there. I went, sent the tape in, and then about a week later I was asked to go and meet Richard Linklater and Ethan. And I met with them, sat with them for about an hour, read the scene a couple of times, and that was it. I was in. Amazing.
Amazing.
Oh, amazing.
You're so good in as well. Andrew Scott, like everything he
lovely
touches
man.
As well. He's a lovely guy.
Diseased with talent, as Twinkie used to say. Diseased with talent. No, lovely fella. And himself, Bobby Cannavale, Margaret Qualley. Like, what a cast. And Richard Linklater, what a director.
He's unbelievable, isn't he? What's his style like? What's he like to work with?
Well, he clearly loves actors, Miriam. Mm. He loves playing with actors. And this was kind of a different process. We rehearsed this for 2 weeks before we shot it. For a couple of reasons. We only had 15 days to shoot the film, which is unheard of for a feature film. And also because it's set in one area. It just takes place in the bar. The movie never leaves the bar. And it's just that slice of 90 minutes from this particular night. And also, Lorenz Hart, who Ethan Hawke plays, is 5 foot. And Ethan Hawke isn't. He's 5'10". So they had to use kind of theatrical devices to make Ethan look 5 foot. So hence the need for rehearsals. So they, for example, they dug a trench through the set, which became Ethan's path.
Wow.
So we had to rehearse around that. Because Oscar Hammerstein is 6'1". And I'm not 6'1", so they put lifts in my shoes. And so there was a rehearsal process, which was great. And also they shot the movie from start to finish. They didn't shoot it out of sequence. So it was like doing a play. And even on the days that we weren't on camera, but we were in the room, we would sit there and watch. And you'd watch Richard Linklater work. And clearly himself and Ethan Hawke have a very special relationship. They've done, I think this was their 9th project together. And Linklater clearly loves actors and loves working with actors. He's a very gentle soul, not a shouter. You know, we've all worked with directors who are shouters. It's not pleasant. It doesn't create a great atmosphere. Linklater was the opposite. You know, if there was a note to be given to you, he would do it after they cut an arm around your shoulder. And so he got, that was his process of getting the best out of his cast. And Ethan Hawke in the movie, I mean, he's just been nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actor. The movie's up for Best Picture. and people are saying that, you know, this could be Ethan Hawke's year. He's been nominated, I think, twice for an Oscar, but he's never won it. But a lot of people who know far more than I do about the history of film and critics, they think this could be his year. He's incredible. And standing beside him and watching him doing what he did, he was incredible. And a nice man, too.
Nice guy.
Oh, stop. Lovely fella.
And it was shot in Ardmore.
Ardmore,
was
yeah.
It?
Yeah. And he said he would spend his days walking Bray Head learning his lines, because the movie lives and dies by his performance. He's in every frame of the movie. And he's incredible in it. He really is incredible. An enormous amount of dialogue. It's a very dialogue-driven movie. As I say, it's like a play. There's no CGI, there's no special effects, there's no flashbacks, nothing like that. It's 90 minutes. I read one review and I thought they hit it the nail on the head. They said it's like the viewer is sitting at the bar on Saturdays just watching this happen around them. And it's so true. It's such a gentle, beautiful portrait of a very troubled man, Lorenz Hart, who had this 25-year writing career with Richard Rodgers. And then they stopped working together because of his alcoholism, his working methods, his lack of working methods. And Richard Rodgers dropped him and had a new project coming up, Oklahoma, and he took Oscar Hammerstein on. And they then went on to write Showboat and Sound of Music, everything. And he's a very complex character, Lorenz Hart, but Ethan just nails it. He's incredible.
Such a great story.
Yeah.
You're incredible, Bo. You're so versatile.
And you're very kind.
And I know when you have a part as good as Hammerstein to promote, it's a bit easier. But I think you said recently that the life of an actor can also be an horrendous slog.
Oh, it is a horrific slog. It's a very, very difficult way to make a living, you know, because of the inconsistency. I was at a function recently and I was in a room filled with chartered accountants. And as you do, you know. And I told the story that I actually trained to be a chartered accountant. I did 6 months in the College of Commerce and Rathmines. And I knew it wasn't for me when my lecturer woke me during a taxation lecture. I mean, can you imagine me as your accountant now? We'd be living under a bridge. We'd have a bit of crack, but we wouldn't have the arse in our trousers. but yeah, so I chose the much more stable and position of a freelance actor. It's a very hard way to make a living.
But you do so many things.
You have
so
to.
You act, you do the lyric show, you do a lot of motoring stuff.
Yeah,
you were
right.
Telling me before we went live, you're right, you're going to do a cooking.
Yeah, I have a food brand coming out now in spring next year. Yeah,
oh, yeah. What's a food brand? I mean, how do you wake up and say, I'm going to have a food brand?
Well, you see, it goes back to, I love cooking as well, you know, and I did MasterChef years ago. And I had
and you were very good.
I did well in this, and I had a cookbook out on the back of it, and I had a food truck down in Kildare Village for a couple of months. As you do, while I was doing the world premiere of The Snapper in the Gate and doing Ireland AM 4 mornings a week. It was great crack. I know what I'll do, I'll open a food truck. Anyway, so I'm launching my own range of sauces and spice rubs, but that's just one kind of string to a very big bow. You know what I mean? But you have to, Miriam. I mean, the reality of it is, if you were to try and survive on money that you'd earn as a theatrical actor in Ireland, you wouldn't. If you were to try and survive on the money you'd earn as a voiceover artist in Ireland, solely, you wouldn't. So you have to do everything. So you do a bit of writing, you do a bit of voiceover work, theatre, television, film, whatever comes along.
And you have four strapping sons to feed.
All,
we have been talking before.
We have been talking about that.
How much they eat.
We were lamenting the fact
honestly,
that
can they
machines.
Eat anymore, young
I know,
sons?
Yeah, there's nothing to eat.
There's nothing to eat.
They just had their dinner. Yeah, that's tricky. That is tricky. But look, everybody's in the same boat. Us parents are in the same boat. We're all trying to feed the kids. So maybe the food brand is coming off that as well. They can just eat the sauces. That's it. But yeah, four strapping youngflas.
God bless them.
Yeah, God bless the mark, yeah.
Yeah.
And a mother that should be dipped in bronze. They should make a statue of poor Lisa. She's got four of them and me. I mean, the poor woman. What a calling in life. Oh, Lord.
Well, you're saying she's fab and her mum is fab.
Oh, Evelyn, my mother-in-law, my current mother-in-law, as I call her. That gets annoying her. She's incredible. She's my hero, actually. She lost her husband, you know, when she was, you know, when Lisa was only three, and you know, she raised three kids. She kept going to work and raised three kids. And, you know, John and Karen, Lisa's brother and sister, they're incredible people. She's got nine grandsons now, Evelyn, and adores them all. And she's been a great support to us over the years. You know, the way mother-in-laws do in terms of babysitting. And no, you go ahead. I don't mind the kids. And nothing's ever a problem. She's supported us. She's helped us. She's just incredible. And she's a big fan of yours, Miriam.
Oh, she's a woman of great taste, obviously.
So good morning, Evelyn. I know she's listening in, but she's incredible. She's incredible. I can't wait to see her over the Christmas.
Bachelor's Walk, almost 25 years ago. Can you believe that? I mean, did you think back then that this was the big time, that it was all going to come easily to you after that?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, my first job, the first time I received a paycheck as an actor was actually in here. I did a radio. Do you remember back in the day, there used to be a daily radio soap on after a Gabo show, a 10 to 1, before the 1 o'clock news. Harbour Hotel was back in the day. Well, this thing was called Convenience Corner, written by Lee Dunn, God bless him. And the first time I ever was paid to act for a living was I was in that. And he used to come over here to RTE on a Friday and we'd record our five episodes for the following week. So it was a half a day's work. Now, just before that, I was driving a van for a living and I was working 6 days a week and I was getting 150 quid a week, 6 days' work. And then I came in here and did this radio drama and I was getting 200 quid for a half a day's work. I thought, I have this sussed. I can retire before I'm 30. And of course, then that finished. And then you're out on your backside then for 6 months doing nothing. But now Bachelor's Walk was that strange one again that, you know, the script comes and you read it and you go, my God, that's brilliant. And we shot a pilot for it. And Deirdre O'Kane was in the pilot, Eva Berthis and Mark O'Halloran and Paul Hickey. And we did the pilot for nothing, as you do. And then about 6 months later, they said, yeah, we're going to make it a series. But I was the only actor that survived from the pilot to the series. They recast everybody else for whatever reasons. Mm. But even when we were making it, we thought, this is very funny, it's very good, but will people like it? And people love it. I mean, there isn't a day that goes by that someone doesn't say to me, Bachelor's Walk, Free the Bees, all that stuff. But it's hard to believe it's 25 years ago.
But the lovely thing is you think back on it very fondly.
Oh, 100%. You know what I mean? I owe everything to us. And John Kearney and Kieran Kearney and Tom Hall, who wrote and directed us, I owe them everything. Yeah. You know, they were incredible. And it was such a training as well, because we did 6 or 8 episodes a season for 3 years and we did a Christmas special. And then I went on to do a couple of movies with John, and they're just incredible. They were incredible times. There were such halcyon days when you think back, like, and of course, it's the days before we had kids, and like, so night shoots weren't a problem. And, you know, we'd wrap in a night shoot in town and go for a few pints and. Couldn't do that now, really. Two pints now, I feel like I've been at a wedding. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'd be in bits for about a week. No, I'd have a 0-0 place. And you don't do tea, do you? That's what I'm like now. But they were halcyon days. They really were. But yeah, it's 25 years, my word. Where's that
gone? It changed your life, though.
100%,
Because was it that it made you... you become a very big star after, but also made you realise, I can make this.
Absolutely.
This can be my living.
And it made me think I can do it. Yeah. You know? And there was other things like that, like when I made my debut in the West End in a play called Stones in His Pockets, which was a two-hander play, but you played 30 characters between the two of you. And I made my West End debut with that. And, you know, that's when I realised that... It was a job because I'd done a lot of theatre over the years, musical theatre and all that, but they were normally 1 week or 2 weeks runs. I did 7 months, 8 months, I think, in London, 8 shows a week. That's when it becomes a job, you know, that's when it really becomes a roast. But it's so gratifying. And I stood there in the opening night, I wanted to go home to my mammy. I was so nervous. But then, of course, at the end of the opening night, and you think, I can do this, you know, because that's Premier League stuff when you're doing the West End. And it's just the graft in terms of doing 8 shows a week and the physicality of that. And it taught me how to look after myself, look after my voice. Started taking honey in my tea and you pick up little tips from other actors. And, you know, because I used to always kind of poo-poo actors who'd had formal training because I never had any training. I mean, I had my amateur theatre training, which was the greatest training I felt in the world, and because we weren't just learning how to act, we were learning how to build the sets, paint the sets, hang the lights, find the props, print the poster, sell the tickets. So we got our training on everything. But then I realised then that actors who were formally trained, I thought they were looking down their nose at me slightly, you know, because I hadn't trained. And I used to poo-poo that whole thing of this Alexander technique and the breathing and the stretching and the Pilates, and I think that's a load of rubbish. But then I thought, well, no, hang on, if you need to do that to get yourself into the correct headspace to do what we're going to do now for the next 2 hours in front of 1,000 people, knock yourself out. And I opened my arms to it, and I opened my arms to parts of their training. And I still do that to this day. If I'm doing a theatrical, if I'm doing a theatre show, you know, it's the longevity. It's looking after yourself. It's minding your voice, minding your body. It's not going for a pint every night because you just can't do it. Mm. You couldn't do 8 shows a week and do it. God be with the days. But so I've learned a lot from. I find myself being a bit of a sponge over the years, learning, picking things up from different kinds of people like Richard Linklater and Sean Penn or whoever it is. Mm. You learn something from them. I don't know what it is, but you've learned something from them, I hope.
But it's great to get that. Lots of people saying nice things. I saw Simon doing Defending the Caveman years ago, says one of our listeners. Yeah. Amazing, amazing, hilarious. I've never forgotten it. Please do it again, Simon.
That was a one-man show, yeah. My God. God bless your memory.
Another said, Simon Delaney's honesty and good humour are admirable. I've had the pleasure of filming him a couple of times over the years, and he's always so positive and good-natured. And another says, lovely to hear Simon on the show. He's so talented. Please tell him we love his Sunday show and Lyric. He's such a warm, charming and funny presenter. Happy Christmas to you all. And that's from Pauline. God, I know both your mum and dad have gone to heaven.
Yeah, my mum passed away when I was only 19. And my dad died 7 years later. Yeah, so we were fairly young, the four of us, my sisters and my brother, when they were gone, which was very tough. And it changed our lives, obviously, immeasurably. But we're very close, the four of us. We always were and we always have been, but obviously, when something like that happens, it kind of tightens the group, you know. And again, like my mother-in-law, Evelyn, my sisters and my brother are a huge support to me over the years, you know, when I chose to do this madness for a living. They've been a great support. Like I remember when my dad passed away, my brother was working in Germany. My youngest sister was only in secondary school. My eldest sister was in the civil service, I think. And I was the actor, so I was living at home. So I started cooking then. I started feeding the family, and that's where that comes from, you know. But yeah, it's a real shame because my mum and dad never saw me do anything, you know. Like my dad saw me do a couple of amateur musicals and all that, but they never saw me do anything professionally. But that's galling, you know. But what really breaks my heart is that they never saw their grandchildren. They never met Lisa. You know, they never saw my brother getting married. That's the real heartbreaking stuff, you know, and that's why I cherish Evelyn so much, because she's the only grandparents, you know, and I know, because I know the relationship I had with my grandparents, because my mother's parents outlived both my mother and father, you know, and they were incredible. But I know the relationship I had with them, and I see the relationship my boys have with Evelyn. It's just, there's something otherworldly about that grandmother relationship. Yeah. And my boys never had that. But my mum and dad are a constant presence in our life. We talk about them all the time. There's photographs of them up and around the house. And, you know, it was my mum's birthday last week. And, you know, she died just before Christmas. She was only 50, you know. I was 19. I'll never forget it. Horrendous time in my life. And then my dad, who I was very close to, he passed away 7 years later. And he was in the business. He was in the show bands back in the day. He played clarinet and saxophone. He was in the Dublin concert band. But there was a rumour, the story about his show band was that he played once with Sinatra. Wow. I know. Now, whether it's true or not.
Let's believe it.
Oh, I believe it to this day, yeah. And the gas thing is, he was in a show band called the Rebel Show Band. And the band leader was a man called Peter Brady. And Peter's daughter, Deirdre, has just retired from the RT Concert Orchestra.
Yeah.
She's been in the Concert Orchestra for years. And we knew each other. And it's just incredible the way my father introduced me to my love of music, which I now translate into the show every Sunday in Lyric, because I'm playing that kind of music. I play the Great American Songbook, musical theatre, movie soundtracks. And it's all connected to my dad.
And lots of people are texting and say they love that show.
Good
Simon,
on
you. Thanks for coming in.
A pleasure.
To me this morning.
I have to go over now and do my own thing now, Miriam.
Yeah, because you're going into your own studio.
Yes.
And that's Sunday afternoon with Simon Delaney.
Yes.
It's on Lyric FM.
It is.
At 1 o'clock. It's a beautiful show.
It's gorgeous.
Happy Christmas, Simon. And congrats on the movie and all your success.
And happy Christmas to all your listeners, especially Evelyn.
Yeah, especially Evelyn. We love Evelyn. Happy Christmas,
you
Simon.
Too,
we'll take a break.